by Tony Bua.
Tony Bua down the near sideline. Touchdown, Razorback.
It is Tony Bua.
He lost it. And Arkansas, Tony Bua comes away with it, and Arkansas comes away with the win.
Big block in there by Tony Bua of the Dolphins.
This is Tony Bua, and you're listening to The Morning Rush.
Welcome back into hour number three of The Morning Rush. Going to the phone lines, welcoming in one of the baddest men ever to put on the Arkansas uniform. Tony Bua now joins us on The Morning Rush. Tony, good morning. Thanks for making some time for us, man.
Good morning, fellas. Thanks for having me.
All right, so we were talking on Sunday, and I know that we were going to open up with this story. Man, you had a little mishap over the weekend. Kind of tell our listeners what happened.
A mishap. Yeah, I definitely had that. Yeah, you could call it more than a mishap. So on Saturday, we were having a great day. Took the kid fishing. Went and shot some guns out in Russellville. And we got back to where we were staying, which was on top of this hill. And my son had been on me all day about going skateboarding, going longboarding, because there are some older kids that live there that do it. So he and I went out there to go do it. And, you know, I'm explaining to him how it works and showing him how to hop off. And I just said, well, let Dad do it one time so you can see, and I can just show you how it works. So I hop on the board, and I start going. And I look back, and he's on the board. And I'm yelling at him, Blaze, get off, get off. And as I'm looking back yelling at him, it's taking a good bit for him to listen to me. So by the time he gets off the board, man, I'm probably going 20 miles an hour. And I look back, and I got to go over, like, this little area where I can't bail out yet. And I start going down. I get going faster. And I get going faster. So about 60 yards into this thing, I have a choice to make where I'm like, I'm probably going about 20 miles an hour, 25 miles an hour at this point. And I think to myself, I can't run this fast, so I can't jump off on this concrete. So maybe I could just go towards the grass and, you know, slide into the grass. But then something in my head just tells me, you can do it. You can do it. So I say, all right, well, I can snowboard and ski, so let's do this. So I stay on this board for another 30 or 40 yards, and at this point I'm going, you know, I don't know. I feel like I'm going about 40 miles an hour. And I'm like, I got this, baby. I got this. And then all of a sudden I hit a little bump, and the board starts chattering. And that board starts wiggling, and I'm like, I don't have this. This is bad. So, you know, you go into that fight or flight mode. So I just decided I was going to have to bail out, but I couldn't bail out because I was on the concrete. So I went over to the grass, and I had this plan all worked out in my head. And it didn't work that way. I hit the grass, and I got catapulted maybe 15, 20, 25 feet. I'm not real sure. And the plan was, you know, just kind of slide, but it catapulted me and threw me in the air. And so then I thought I could just roll like I was 20 again. And no, I did not roll when I hit the ground. I hit my shoulder straight into the ground, broke my shoulder, broke my humerus bone at the very top of the ball. And I broke it down kind of by my arm. So I had two breaks in there. And yeah,
you
went to the emergency room, got a sling. That's all they could give me. Said it'll heal up in 8 weeks, and we went and watched some fireworks.
Well, sounds like I guess you found out you weren't 20 anymore, didn't you?
No, I don't bounce anymore. I just kind of stick.
So
it didn't really work.
At what moment coming down the hill did the confidence evaporate? Because I can hear as you tell the story, Tony, you had full confidence you were going to pull this off, and then there was a moment. And I know it's it. You can tell us in your head. There's a moment where all confidence was shattered, and you said, this is going to end badly.
The minute, you know, because we go snowboarding and skiing, and I'm the guy that goes just straight down and saves my legs. And I think maybe one day I should have been I missed my call, and I could have been a downhill skier. But the minute that board started chattering, you know, after I was already committed, I was like, this is not good. This is really bad. And then everything started happening real fast. And I thought I had a decent plan, but, you know, it didn't work out. So that's the way life is. So fast forward to yesterday, I'm, you know, I cannot move my arm at all, really. And we had five adjuster meetings, and I had two installs, two roofs being put on up here in Northwest Arkansas through Foster's Exterior Solutions. We got every one of those roofs bought, and I think we got them bought from pity, because I was actually on the roof with the adjusters, and they were like, dude, you are crazy. And I was wincing and moaning and stuff, and I really think they bought a couple of them just because I was up there with them.
Tony Bua here with us on the Morning Rush. Tony, it's kind of funny you tell this story of the longboarding, and you play with the same type of mentality on the football field, all out, tenacity, hit whoever, didn't matter. And, I mean, you think about some of the legendary hits you had at Arkansas, but one that everyone knows you for, not just Arkansas fans, but outside of that, is the Dolphins hit. And I was watching it this morning. I mean, you didn't knock out just one guy. You knocked out two. One of the guys was 300 pounds, and your whole sidelines is just coming over congratulating you. When did you, like, start playing with that mentality on the football field? Is it an early age, high school? Like, when did that whole thing come about?
Well, I grew up in a small town called Liberty, Texas, and we had a peewee football team that I actually got to play on a year before I was supposed to, because that's a whole nother story. But my first year, I wasn't very good. At the end of the year, they gave me the ball because I wouldn't hit anybody, and I was scared. And they gave me the ball at the end of the year, and I ran for like 30 or 40 yards, and then I got tackled, and I liked getting hit, but I didn't really want to hit anybody. I was scared. It was my first year. The second year, I think I was about 8 years old, and it kind of took off from there. And when we were at Liberty, we were like the worst team in the league. So I think we won like one game our first year. Well, the next year, we started winning, won six or seven games. So now I'm 8 years old. But I think it really started then, because with my dad and my mom, the attitude they had about sports and just about, and you know, everything we did, it was pretty much, you're going to give it your all. And when you fail, because you're going to fail, you will know that you gave it your all, and then you learn something from it. And so I think that was instilled in me pretty early on. And I could see how growing up and going through high school, I could see how other people didn't have that, and I could tell how that could be a benefit, you know, it just kind of stuck with me.
Were you always the undersized guy, even from a young age, junior high? Were you always the guy that had to play with the chip on your shoulder because you weren't the biggest guy on the field?
No, I don't really know how. So that's sort of funny in itself. That's just, I don't know, I just think the way that I played, I think people could see themselves in me. In high school, as a junior, I was 195 pounds, and I was, 5'11". And, as a sophomore, I was like 185 or 190 pounds, 5'11". And I didn't really think that I was small until I got to the college level. And the funny thing is, in college, I didn't think that I was small. I just thought that people, I don't know really what they were seeing when I was in college. And it wasn't until it was our senior year, and my mom had brought me a picture from an Auburn game a few years later, and I had never seen this picture, and it was me, Caleb Miller, and Jermaine Petty, and I was in the middle. And we had all missed an interception, so we all had kind of like our hands down, and we were staring at our hands. And when I saw that picture, that's when I kind of realized, oh, wait, I'm not that big. People do, okay, that's where they're getting it from, because those guys, Jermaine Petty and Caleb Miller, were like dwarfing over me. And I think that was the first time it hit me, I was like, wait, So there is a difference between 6'3", 6'4", and 5'11". But I never really let that stop me, man. I never really let that bother me. I felt like, there were guys that were bigger. But maybe they, I played at like 220 when I was a linebacker, 220, 225. My senior year, I played at 215, but they always had me listed at like 205. The university did, which I never really understood. But I think when people saw me and they saw the way I played, it was more blue collar. Yeah. And that's really what they related to. They kind of hung on to that.
You could get them to lie about your weight, but not your height? Because I would imagine you'd have loved been listed at 6 foot.
I know. I told them I'm 5'11 and 3/4". You got to round it up. 5'11 and 3/4". But they never would round it up.
Tony, there's some people that doubted you growing up. And I think back to the conversation that you had with Mac Brown, Texas head coach at the time. And he said, you weren't good enough for big time football. And I love how you guys got to go in to Austin, Texas in 2003 and just absolutely put a beat down on those guys. What was the conversation that you had with Mac after the game, especially doing what you did not only that season, but seasons leading up to that?
Well, I had that game when I found out that we were playing them. I had that game pinned, you know, on my calendar for a long time. And I think at that point in my career, I had, you know, gotten over the fact that, you know, I was the underdog and nobody believed in me because of what I was able to do all the way up to that point. So at the end of the game, I just ran up to him and I shook his hand and I asked him, I said, hey, do you remember me? And he said, yes, I remember you. You've had a great career, and I messed up on that one. And that, to me, was the biggest compliment, one of the biggest compliments that I ever got. You know, it was a little bit of redemption. It was a lot of redemption, and it was just finally somebody recognizing to my face that they were wrong and that they had missed on me. And so that was a lot of validation, and that felt really, really good.
Tony, one of the guys that did believe in you is Houston Dale Nutt, and we've had so many different players on this program that have talked about just different isms, different things he said, different motivational speeches. Can you take me back to your first conversation or first locker room speech with Nutt? What was that like to hear him talk to you or you guys for the first time and really just first time hearing him?
Well, this might not be what you want to hear, but I just thought that this dude, like, man, our head coach is full of it. Like, this guy is full of himself. He's just, like, putting on a front. He's putting on a show. There's no way that he can really be like this. Man, this guy's kind of like a used car salesman. That was my first impression. That's really what I thought. And then as I got to know him and as I got to see him day in and day out, come with that same intensity, that same passion, that same love for his players and for Arkansas and for the game. That's whenever I was just like, man, this is amazing. Because, you know, when you first meet him, when you're talking to him, you don't think he's paying attention or you just don't think, you just get this feeling like, man, nobody can really be on like this all the time. And, but that's him. That is him to a core. That's who he is. I guess the only time that man stops is when he sleeps. So when you're playing for a guy like that, and he is just so amped up all the time, you know, it feeds off of him and into you and into the water boy, into the trainers, into everybody. And, you know, there were a lot of games that we were outmatched, and maybe we were even outcoached a little bit, but we came out of those games because we came out of those games with a W because we just believed that we were going to win, and we gave more effort than the other team.
Tony,
and that's really what he was able to instill in us, I think. Just that attitude of Razorbacks never quit. You never take a playoff, and one day it's all going to be gone, and you don't want to look back and think you didn't play your best on a play.
Tony Bua with us here on the Morning Rush. What was it specifically he did, or how did he go about instilling that confidence? Because what you're talking about is making you believe you're better than you are, you know, raising your level of performance. What was his method? How did he go about instilling that, not just in you, but the entire team?
I mean, I believe it's just his passion and just the love that he gave his players. You know, he sacrificed a lot, and a lot of coaches do sacrifice their family time. And, you know, when you saw how much that he sacrificed and how much he was willing to give and some of the things that he did when guys got in trouble, showing up to places, picking them up, throwing them in their car, slapping them around. And you realized it was more than football. You realized that he cared about you as a person. He cared about you. He cared about cultivating you into what he believed you could be or being the best person that you could be. And when you have somebody like that on your side, you know, he stuck his neck out for a lot of players. There's things that happen that, you know, obviously public don't know about. And when you saw him go to bat for his players, that's when you, I mean, how could you not, you know, give up your body to do whatever it took to win a game, you know, because, yeah, we were playing for the Razorbacks, and we took a lot of pride in being Razorbacks, but I also believe that we also took, you know, a lot of pride in him, and we wanted to do well for him as well.
Your last season was 0-3. One of the things that stand out about that year was the trip to Kentucky. Arkansas wins in 7 overtimes. You talk about doing what it takes to win a game. That's the perfect example. What do you remember about that game that so many cherish that memory in such a historical moment at the time for Arkansas?
Well, those overtime games are a little bit of a trip, because after like the third or fourth overtime, the advantage definitely goes to the offense, and you just got guys out there on defense that are so tired, like if they're running misdirection plays, you just don't have it in you to really, I mean, your mind's gone and you're just kind of out there. And I just remember that during that game, there was a lot of times where everybody was just trying to make a play. And in the game, you know, everybody wants to be the hero. Just make a play, get off the field, and win the game. And for whatever reason, that game, you know, just wasn't a real standout game for me. I was just trying to do my job because I had been, I had been in a little bit of trouble with the coaches from the previous games, trying to do too much. And I remember at the end of that game, like, I think you guys played a clip of it where Jared Lorenzo, rest in peace, where he come running up and he was just going to try to bulldoze over everybody after the play had failed. And he just kind of tried to fumble the ball so somebody would jump on it. And I just happened to be right there and I fell on it. I remember picking up that ball just being so elated that the game was over. And if you remember, when Jermaine Petty had a good play at the Ole Miss game, he did the airplane all the way down the field and celebrated. But on this particular Kentucky game, it was 7 overtime. So when we won and I got that ball in my hand, I was like, should I sprint down there? And I was like, no. I just held my hands up and I just slowly walked. That was all I could do. I was just so glad it was over with.
I mean, during your time, you played in the 7 overtime at Ole Miss, 6 overtimes against Tennessee, 2 against Bama, then the 7 we just mentioned against Kentucky. That doesn't just normally happen in a four-year career.
I think we played a four overtime game against Alabama as well. And it's funny because after that Ole Miss game, we just felt like if we went into overtime, we were going to win. And we had a 6 overtime against Tennessee, which we lost. So we had 2 7s, a 6, a 4, and then I believe you mentioned a few of the 2 overtimes or whatever. And I think, you know, sometimes Houston will get a bad rap for, you know, I've heard people say, you know, he played not to lose. He didn't play to win. Well, and I can understand where they're coming from, but if you know your players and you know what you've got in that locker room, maybe sometimes playing that way was your best opportunity to win. Because you know it could be a war of attrition if you went into overtime and you knew that your kids weren't going to give up because of how close you were with them and how close they were with the coaching staff and just the camaraderie that we had where we would never let go of the rope for one another. Never let go of the rope. And don't be that guy that goes into the locker room at the end of the game and can look at your teammates and say, you know, I didn't give it my all. I let y'all down. And I think he knew that. And so I think a lot of times, you know, he had that in the back of his mind, and that's how he called some of the games.
Tony, let me top off the interview with this, man. I know you've done a couple of these interviews as of late, and you talked about how the head coach at the University of Arkansas, him understanding the culture is important. And you feel like that Brett Bielema and Chad Morse, they didn't really understand the coaching culture at Arkansas. You obviously played for a coach that did, Houston Dale Nutt, being from here and stuff. Do you think Sam Pittman, who grew up liking the Razorbacks, who former players vouched for him to get the job, do you think he understands the culture of what it takes on how to win at Arkansas?
You know, I've never met Coach Pittman. Never spoken to Coach Pittman. And to be real frank with you, I don't know. You know, I don't know a whole lot about him other than just a little bit of the research that I, you know, when he became the Arkansas head coach. So I don't really feel very comfortable speaking on that. You know, I hope, and as fans, that's all we can do is just have hope, which, if you have a little bit of hope, then, you know, that makes your season a little bit better, right? And I just feel like the last few years we didn't have a lot of hope. But I will tell you this. I do feel like the previous coaching staff didn't get it. They didn't get Arkansas. You know, other than Northwest Arkansas, Little Rock, and maybe Fort Smith, you know, Arkansas is built on blue-collar people that live in small towns, that really work every day of their lives. Work, I mean, and they give whatever it takes in order to live the lifestyle that they're living. And I think it really hit me again this weekend when I was back home, when I was back in Russellville on one of my friend's farms. He's got like 190 acres outside of Russellville. And, you know, that's where he grew up. And he was telling me stories about how he was sitting in the dirt driveway when he was a kid. Now, this guy's 3 years older than me, listening to the Razorbacks because they couldn't get reception in the house. They didn't have electricity in the house. And I'm not saying that in a derogatory way. It's just when you save up all year, you know, to get a ticket to go watch the Razorbacks, mm-hmm. I think that the players need to understand, hey, whether we're winning or whether we're losing, there are people in this stadium that have saved up all year and done whatever it took just to get a ticket, just to get a glimpse at the Razorbacks, just to get a glimpse at their team that they love, that they watch, that they're all there is. And this is a big deal. And mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter if you're down 14, 21, or if you're up 14, or if you're up 21. You play this play like it's your last play. And if it doesn't go well, you play the next play like it's the most important play. You know, what's the most important play in football? The next play. And I think if the coaches can instill that in the kids, you know, because we've got a lot of, you know, people that come in from outside. They come in from the big city. And it's funny to me, even when I was there, you'll watch a guy like myself, not highly recruited, but I wasn't from Arkansas. Mm-hmm. But the guys that were from Arkansas that were three stars, and then they bring in a guy, you know, that's slated to go ahead of them, that's like a four or five star. Man, that three-star athlete will push that five-star kid past his limits that he even knew he had just because of the love that he has for the University of Arkansas and the Razorbacks.
Yeah.
And I think that we've missed some of that in the past. I think that we brought in professionals who were just that. They were professionals, and they weren't they didn't have that Arkansas blood in them.
Maybe.
So, you know, I hope he can do it.
I think a lot of you are in that same boat. So Tony Bua, former Arkansas Razorback, kind enough to take some time out of his day to spend it with us and the listeners on the Morning Rush. Tony, we really appreciate it, man, and best of luck to you.
All right, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Thanks, you guys have a good day.
Hey, get that arm better.
Great stuff from Tony Bua this morning.
Good interview there. Good conversation. So,